runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the weekly internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Carl Franklin introducing show number 18 with guest Sarbjit Singh Gill, recorded Thursday, July 19th, 2007. Run As Radio is produced each week by Poit Productions, offering professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell, and you're listening to Run As Radio with myself and my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hello, everybody. How you doing there, Richard?
Doing very well, sir. We're now deep into August and enjoying my summer as always.
Yeah, it's been a pretty good summer, pretty nice. I know we've had some pretty decent weather here. I've had an opportunity to get out and around doing some boating and some other fun stuff.
Trying to do non-work as well, right?
And people who know me know that I am pretty bad in that area. So I've really actually made a real effort over, especially this year, to try to do a little better job of that.
So, hey, I got an email that is actually a response to our show on disk space backup.
Well, why don't you read it?
Back on show 16, when we talked to Steve Whitner. I think that was a show you put together too.
Yeah, it was a good show. Steve was from Quantum, as I recall.
That's right.
It was really a very interesting show. I know that I learned a lot of little tidbits of information there.
Okay, this is not a quantum-based disk backup solution we're talking about here, but let me read it to you.
All right.
Richard and Greg, you asked for users with an existing backup to disk solution to write in and tell you about it. I am a developer by trade and not a sysadmin, so I'm eager to hear where I can make improvements. Please be gentle.
All right.
I'm afraid.
This could be interesting.
Yeah, oh, you bet. At the heart of my solution is an open source disk archiver utility. The disk archiver utility has its roots in the Linux world, which some may find irritating, but that does not change the fact that it works. Because you must specify paths as a disk archiver utility sees them through the SIGWIN library.
Right.
So that's /sig drive /c/users/andrew/desktop instead of /c:/user/andrew/desktop.
Uh-huh.
It's just SIGWIN, man. It's all right.
So we're talking about DAR and SIGWIN so far.
That's right.
Okay. Does it require iTunes? If it requires iTunes, it's straight out for me.
I have written several PowerShell scripts around DAR to make it more friendly to use, and then I have another master script that contains all my jobs that I can use at any time.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Huh.
The target of this is an old iPod. You called it, man.
The target?
The target of this is an old iPod that got replaced by a bigger, fancier iPod video. I use TrueCrypt in device mode and mount my partition on my Z drive and kick off my script. After it is all done, then I unmount the drive, unless TrueCrypt has already handled this for me during the night. Because it runs it overnight. TrueCrypt, of course, auto-disconnects those drives, right?
Yeah.
Using the iPod is a neat trick because the only clues you get that it is not a normal iPod are, one, the setup screen is showing, and two, when you plug it into the computer, iTunes reports that it is corrupted.
Well, it sounds like iTunes.
I could have made a small music partition and actually copied music over to it so it would still function, but I'm not James Bond. Actually, I think that would be Q, not James Bond.
Q, yeah.
The downsides to my setup as I see it is, one, I cannot schedule a job because the iPod must be connected and mounted in TrueCrypt. Two, I don't have a fancy GUI to help me manage the backups. Three, I know that the iPod is not the best target, but it's my personal backup. The upsides are that it is PowerShell, so I can do anything I may need to in the future with ease, such as backing up a database or shutting down servers. That's absolutely true. And we got to do a show on PowerShell.
Yeah, I think you're right. Now, PowerShell is really some pretty super flexible, cool scripting
stuff. Very powerful stuff. CLI for the .NET framework. It's very clever.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple last points here. If you are still looking for some guests on backup to disk, I suggest Steve Gibson. Well, he also has a podcast. I don't think you guys compete. Yeah, I don't think we compete either. I can't think of anyone better than Steve when it comes to hard drive reliability. And he's the guy who wrote that utility for analyzing the status of a drive.
Right.
So of course, he's Steve Gibson. I don't really need to tell anybody. I mean, he's Steve Gibson, for crying out loud.
Just be interesting to get on the show. Smart guy, yeah.
One thing that has bothered me from show number 9, the show on TrueCrypt, is that Eric said that TrueCrypt uses the same key for every file in the volume. This is not technically correct. TrueCrypt encrypts on the sector level, not the file level. I don't mean to complain. I just figured that I would include it, seeing how I am writing anyway. Keep up the good work, Andrew Burns.
Thanks for letting us know that, Andrew. I think I sort of discovered that after the fact as well, but I'd forgotten about that.
So clarify this for me again. I guess technically what Eric said is true, that you're only using the same key for every file because you're actually using the same key across the whole disk.
Right.
But it's not really file-based at all. Am I making any sense?
I think you're making sense. This is one of those things that, depending on the terminology that you use, can be somewhat confusing.
And I think the point that Eric was trying to make is that there are encryption utilities that are specific to file and will use different keys for each file.
Absolutely.
That's just not the way that TrueCrypt works. And hey, if you're not happy with TrueCrypt, they'll refund you every penny you paid for it.
That's true.
All right, Greg, let's introduce Sarbjit. Sarbjit Singh Gill, the owner of Gill Technologies, is a Microsoft MVP in Windows Server Systems and an independent consultant and trainer with an MCSE, MCSD, MCDBA, and MCTS, and specializes in Microsoft technologies, has a lot of experience around developing system architectures, and is also in Singapore. So here we are on the west coast of North America in the late afternoon, and it's 6 in the morning for you, Sarbjit?
That's right, 6 in the morning.
Bright and early.
Yep, bright and early. So starting off your day right with an interview. And today we're talking SharePoint, right?
That's right.
And we first met at TechEd US in Orlando. In fact, you were in Speaker Idol.
Yes, I was. Yeah, the finalist in one of the heats.
Yeah, one of we only had two IT guys that made it all the way to the finals, too. I think you did really well, too.
That's right. I remember the presentation. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I used paintbrush throughout the entire presentation. I didn't have any slides at all, except for just a couple of them.
That's right.
Yeah, it was a great security diagramming demonstration using paint. It was a very cool way and very effective, I might add, to communicate those concepts about using DNS. So tell me a bit about SharePoint. I must have been involved with it early on then, because it's evolved a lot since the early days.
Since 2001.
This is where Microsoft comes in and starts building the server-side stuff, server-side components of your Microsoft Office application.
Right, the server-side component of Office.
Yeah, for example, if you had Microsoft Word installed on your PC, and that really makes you very efficient as an individual because that's a pretty cool word processing software. But if you have another 20 people or maybe 100 also running Microsoft Word and you would like to collaborate with each other, so now you need a server-side component of Microsoft Word. So SharePoint, the early part of SharePoint, like for example the team side, will sit on the server side, will allow all these people to connect at the same time, collaborate, have version control, have check-in, check-out components, all on the server side. So this was a client-server thing with Microsoft Office.
I got to think that just the ability to manage a lot of Word documents in something more sophisticated than a folder tree, so that you can find the documents that are related to each other and you don't have to get into crazy naming strategies. Once those, you know, document count gets high, that gets really tough.
That's right. So the next thing after allowing people to collaborate would be to allow searching of the document, and then metadata on the document comes in. And then eventually you realize we also started to look into things like Excel services, and then comes into a PowerPoint. There's also a PowerPoint side of the server, and then put more things into that, and you get content management. And going further from that, you get all the different templates for SharePoint. You go into collaboration. You go into BI. You go into reporting. And then if you integrate that when you back an application, then you can bring in your SAP or your CLL or PeopleSoft stuff right up into the portal.
Right. Custom web parts to run right there on the web page.
Yep.
So this is going all the way to this is the hub of a business now.
Absolutely. So in the version 2003 of SharePoint, if you wanted to bring up some PeopleSoft data into your portal, that required a lot of code writing, a lot of customization. In 2007, that's a BDC component, the Business Data Catalog, which is literally in the middle tier, which allows you to create an XML file of an application definition and hook up some web parts to your backend system, and voila, you have everything on your portal at the same time. It could be SAP and PeopleSoft and Oracle data all in one go.
So you get beyond Office and into all of those other enterprise-related applications.
That's right. So your line of business application data would show up on the same portal page as any other data.
So that was 2003. What happens when we go to move to version 2007?
2007 has a lot more integration with other products from Microsoft. So one example is SQL Server. SQL Server 2005, they took the BI component, the reporting component, the analysis services, and plugged that right straight into SharePoint. So you could now have SQL Server 5 with some cubes, some KPIs, and all this could directly be pointed out and shown on the SharePoint 2007 portal. Another example is the Excel services. So if you wrote a pretty cool spreadsheet and the math in the spreadsheet was something pretty cool and it could do a lot of functionality, and you want to share the spreadsheet with another 100 people in your office, you don't have to pass them a copy of the spreadsheet. You just put the spreadsheet on the server, and the server-side engine of the calculation engine of Excel will display that in a browser, and you could literally fill up all the cells and do a map, get some answers.
So isn't that like turning it into a template of some kind?
Yeah, and that's right. It's like a kind of template, but it runs within a browser. And if you really don't know, you would think that you're using a web application.
Oh, I see.
Actually, you're not. You're just running a spreadsheet in the browser.
So the spreadsheet, the functionality is running on the server side, but you have a web-based interface with which you can interact?
That's right. So it was as if you wrote a web application. But actually, it was nothing more than a spreadsheet that you built in Excel 2007, and then you uploaded that to a server and made it available via web interface. So it's gotcha. Like writing an ASP.NET application, but the only thing is you did it with Excel 2007.
Yeah, no Excel or no ASP.NET was involved in the creation of that at all. You don't have to write anything. It just happens.
No, you don't have to. In 2003, what would happen is that Excel spreadsheet would literally run in a browser, but or some kind of ActiveX control, and the engine on the server was the same engine as on the client. But so if you take a client-side engine and you put that on the server and you expect a couple of hundred people to connect to it and run the spreadsheet at the same time, it just won't work.
Right.
In 2007, the engine was rebuilt completely for server-side engine compared to the client-side engine. It's like taking a car engine and converting that to become truck engine.
So and built for that multi-user scenario.
That's right.
And that's what they call MOS?
MOS, yeah, that's for Microsoft Office SharePoint Server.
Right. Okay. So that's just a new name. It's not really a new product per se.
That's the 2007 version, yeah.
It's also a combination of other products. In the previous version, Microsoft had CMS, Content Management Server. 2002 was the last version. And that now incorporates into MOS. So MOS is also a content management product, or called Web Content Management, WCM.
Right.
And it's SharePoint at the same time.
So SharePoint has gone through, really is in its third major version or incarnation. The 2001 version, which I had the pleasure of running pre-release and as an extranet, believe it or not, was yep. really pretty rudimentary and pretty basic. They really kind of grew up somewhat in the 2003 version, but even then there was Windows SharePoint Services and SharePoint Portal Server. How is it all put together now? What's the relationship now with the new version?
Oh, okay, so in 2001 you had Team Services, which eventually became Windows SharePoint Services in 2003. And in 2007, it still is Windows SharePoint Services. So from Team Services in 2001 became Windows SharePoint Services 2.0, and now it's Windows SharePoint Services 3.0. This is a free component. Well, what I mean is if you have Windows 2003 licenses, you could download Windows SharePoint Services and you could install it.
It's just part of the Windows Server license.
It is. It's a provisioning. It's a website provisioning component.
Oh, really?
That's what really it is.
Okay.
Yeah, one of the beauties of SharePoint, the whole SharePoint system, is when you mentioned provisioning, is the ability to do self-service provisioning and to delegate authority across your company, whether it's a small or a large company. I think that's a pretty powerful aspect of using it, especially like in an intranet environment. It allows the company to build and grow and maintain the system themselves.
Absolutely. So the provisioning part is pretty impressive, because if you could create a site definition by just manipulating a whole bunch of XML files, and then you give this XML file over to Windows SharePoint Service and you say, go ahead and build me a website based on that site definition, it'll just do it for you. So if you're a developer and you want to start off with a foundation level, you want all this bunch of services, all these things in a website so you can write some code on top of it, site definition is the way to go.
And I've heard SharePoint, especially the earlier versions, called a kind of virus, because everybody and their mother's dog was setting them up in their little local work group without involving IT at all, and then expecting it to be backed up and protected and so forth like it was an IT product.
That's right. So that's where the SharePoint portal server comes in. So in 2001 and in 2003, there was the server side, there was the server component called the SharePoint portal server. And that would cost you money, of course, if you want to buy and install that.
Right.
The portal server can take all the low-level sites, which are running on Windows SharePoint services, tie them all up together to a one top-level hierarchy. And one of the best things you could do is you could start searching from the top all the way down to all the hierarchies of the SharePoint sites that you had at a lower level. And the problem with SharePoint portal in 2003 even was, it was not a site. It was built using all kinds of components and controls. And if you worked with Windows SharePoint services, and if you, when you go to the portal, it's a complete different kind of animal.
Right.
So Microsoft listened to their customers in 2003 and said, okay, in 2007, I'm going to make the portal just another site, just like Windows SharePoint services site. Only thing is it uses a different template. So in 2007, everything is a site, no matter, you know, if it's an administration or if it's a portal or if it's a Windows SharePoint services site, they are all the same animal. They're all sites.
That makes sense. And from an IT perspective, it's the portal product that I care about. It's my ability to manage. I'm pushing down the content creation to the users. I just need a management tool that lets me take care of all of that, make sure it's properly backed up, it's properly provisioned, and you know what its resource demands are. If I need to add more horsepower to the equation, I can do that.
That's right. Absolutely. And when you talk about the horsepower, in 2003, there was very restricted architectures of farm that you can have. So you have to have a combination of front-end web servers, the index servers or the search servers, and the number of SQL servers all have to be in a certain combination.
Okay, so there were specific limits on what I could do in 2003.
That's right. So you could have 3 front-end web servers. You have to have at least maybe just 1 index server, 1 search, and then, of course, your back-end SQL. You could put a cluster if you want. In 2007, you could put this in any combination you wanted. You could start with 1 web, 2 index, you could move to 20 web, you could move to 5 indexes, middle tier, and then you can move to a cluster. It doesn't really matter any combination you want to, it just works. So the farm flexibility is really good for a company to move from a single server to a front-end, back-end with SQL, and then to move to a medium-sized farm to a large farm. It just works from one stage to another.
In one of the areas that SharePoint always worried me in the earlier versions was backup. It seemed like it was almost backup proof because there were so many different bits written in different places. The only thing I could do that reliably back it up was image the machines it was running on.
That's right. In 2001, the content was stored on the web server itself. So if you have a couple of web servers running SharePoint, you had to go from every single server and take all the bits from every one of them and install them separately. 2003 made the big difference by storing everything into a SQL server.
Ah.
So the web servers kind of became stateless because whatever they had all came from a SQL store, which is SQL server. Maybe the metadata of IIS or maybe some binaries that you install on the front end, that made a difference. And that same thing carries on to 2007 as well. All content, everything goes to the SQL backend.
So the only thing you need to back up is the database.
Yeah, that's right. With configuration databases, content databases, index databases, and as long as you back up your SQL servers, you pretty much got almost 80-90% of all your content and configuration already. And in 2007, they allow you to back up your entire farm, or maybe just a site, from a browser interface, which wasn't available in 2003.
So that's sort of part of that portal portion of SharePoint.
Yeah. So now we don't call it SharePoint Portal Server anymore. We just call it SharePoint Server.
SharePoint
Portal
Server
is now just a template. That's all.
Okay.
Certainly SharePoint Server, the 2007 version, is definitely matured enough to where large organizations are actually building some of their public web, you know, their internet web presences on it and are using it for building communities. You didn't see that a whole lot in 2003. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that there were some pretty significant enhancements to the new version, the latest version released here in 2007, just to enable internet type of activity.
SharePoint was really meant from the beginning to be a component for intranet and extranet, not really internet. So if you want an internet website, you should go use CMS.
Yeah, and I never thought of SharePoint that way. I always thought of it as an internal product.
Hey, that's why it was designed from the beginning to be the internal collaboration kind of component. And now, because CMS is part of it, so now it also becomes a component that can be used to build internet sites. With all the companies I work in Singapore, even government agencies, a lot of them are always using SharePoint to run internet websites, using the CMS component. Instead of working with developers or HTML designers, even the CEO himself wants to go straight into his website, sign in, and start creating, loading in web parts and filling up content and sending it off for approval. So much better. You can do it on the fly, especially when there's investors involved and you need to have content updated pretty quickly and fast.
So this is, I mean, you're talking about the regular users are creating the pages as well?
Yep. So even non-IT folks are putting in brand new page, loading in all the controls the way they want them, and then just sending it off for approval. So it just works.
How granular is the security model around that sort of thing? That's what worries me. Is I like being able to do that, but I want to be able to control who does it.
With CMS, it's not really very low-level stuff because it's just pure just content.
Right.
Unless you're talking about like a listing, like a list of documents, then you have control over the site, you have control over the list, and you have control of all the items in the list one at a time. So item level permission is something that is available in SharePoint, but if you're talking about CMS, purely content management, then it's more of page permission per page, what's up on that page, and the content of each one of those web parts on that page. Because then you're not dealing with granular item level because it's not a list; it's just one page with content on.
And is this all integrate with Active Directory? So I'm just in a regular domain security model?
Yep, it's up to you if you want to or you don't want to. And you can do a standalone without ADE. And in 2007, Microsoft again listened to their customers and decided that if you were using something which is not ADE or you have some LDAP kind of system, well, that would also work.
Oh, okay.
Because it's built on ASP 2.0, so you can literally, if you really want to, you can add your own authentication provider, and that would work. So it doesn't have to be AD. 2003 was kind of rigid, had to be AD, and a lot of people didn't like that.
Yeah, so 2007, now we have the choice to build our own security provider if we really want to.
Absolutely. If you really want to, the lowest level of customization, you could throw in your own authentication provider and the ASP 2.0 and use that instead.
Yeah, but I really don't want to. I hate building that stuff.
But with support for like industry standard stuff, like, you know, standard web services, interoperability stuff, you know, SOAP and different XML object models, then you really have an awful lot of flexibility in those APIs to be able to do the integration, whether it's at a high level or a low level.
Yep. And it's based on 2.0, .NET 2.0, except for when you're working with things like workflow, then it's .NET 3.0. And the object model is very complete. So you can literally do the basic provisioning and site definition stuff all the way down to using web services to communicate to Windows SharePoint services. So I'll give you an example. If you were writing a Windows application which ran on every client and you wanted to offer functionalities which normally came with SharePoint, for example, document storage, you could do that. Seeing that if one SharePoint is out of the box, one of their role is to become a document repository. So you could actually enable web services and you could write a Windows application, put in some controls, some drop-down leads and stuff like that. And it was actually talking to a back-end Windows SharePoint services. From the front end, it looks like a pretty cool Windows application that you could actually go in there, type a document name, search for it, and then from the drop-down leads, see all the other various versions and then pick one and say submit and open, or maybe. But from the back end, there was Windows SharePoint services servicing everything of this. So it became a fantastic back end for application developers if they wanted functionalities like searching or they want the document repository and they don't have to write the back end at all because Windows SharePoint services provided that.
That's pretty cool. I got to think that there's a great market for third party elements to SharePoint as well.
Yeah.
Considering the way they've architected this, you ought to be, I mean, you're a consultant, obviously, so you, I don't know that you're necessarily writing any software for resale around SharePoint, but do you find yourself having certain products you like to add into the mix?
Well, from what I've worked with, for example, the National Library, very often they wanted a whole other, they wanted collaboration to occur on SharePoint, but not for Microsoft Office documents. So one example was an oil exploration company, and they had a lot of CAD/CAM kind of drawings.
Oh, yeah.
And they wanted to collaborate on these CAD/CAM drawings. And you realize that's not possible out of the box because Microsoft allows collaboration with Microsoft Office and SharePoint Server using Microsoft Office documents like Excel or Word and stuff like that.
Right.
So for that, we needed to add third-party components to allow collaboration with CAD/CAM or non-Microsoft documents. That's something that occurs quite often because the file types are not always Microsoft Office file types. Sometimes they are kind of GIS maps and stuff like that.
Contrary to what Microsoft might say, not everything is an Office document.
Exactly.
That's the beauty of 2007 was Microsoft finally listened and said that, I know that not everybody is going to use SharePoint with Office. So that's why they have content types in 2007. So you can literally, from scratch, build your own content type, tag that with some metadata, take a bunch of content type, put them into a list, and assign them column names, and you can literally create your entire content from scratch. It doesn't have to be a pre-built Office or Word or Excel or stuff. Now you can do it from scratch, from the beginning. Completely, and it means Microsoft telling the customers, you can store any kind of document you want, any kind, and anytime you feel like it's not there out of the box, go ahead, create your own content type.
That's pretty cool.
That is really good. Content type is a very powerful feature in 2007. So, and I can build every single column, every single metadata from scratch. And then assign policies and assign workflows and all kinds of stuff and then enable that for storage of my non-Microsoft Office or non-Microsoft documents.
Now, you've mentioned workflow a few times. Give us a little more detail around workflow and what that means in SharePoint. And I know there's been some substantial enhancements in the latest version as compared to the 2003 version.
That's right. In 2003, there was a workflow which was just basically approval. If you submit a document, somebody had to approve it, and if it approved, it shows up in the document library. It's very that simple.
And a lot of third-party tools that you could buy that would do more complex workflow, but not out of the box.
That's right. So you had to use third-party tools to enhance workflow in 2003. And Microsoft finally came out with .NET Framework 3.0, and there was Windows Workflow Foundation. So Windows Workflow Foundation can now be used in SharePoint 2007 to build your own workflows. So now you can build a workflow without writing any piece of code using SharePoint Designer. And if you feel you want something really more complicated, then you can use Visual Studio 2005, install the Framework 3.0 extension, and now you could use Visual Studio 2005 and then go ahead and build your own complex workflow. For example, you could build an entire student registration system based on SharePoint. It's like a vertical application, a solution on top of SharePoint to accommodate maybe to be used for a training company, for example. I could open up a form, fill up the student information, drop down the list, choose a course I want to register, pick and choose the schedule, and I could submit. When you submit, all the workflow code to the back of that form starts running. And that's where we start to take a look at the schedule, we take a look at registration, and then we come back to you and show you a status report. At the same time, the workflow also gets in touch with the supervisor or the sales office or the logistics and stuff like that. So it just basically goes from top to bottom. If you remember when we go to school and we first started learning about computers, we always introduce us to workflows. You have to draw these diagrams and hook them up and say this is how applications control flows. Guess what? Now you do it in your code. When you write your code, you are actually designing flowcharts, but this time using some pretty cool workflows.
Certainly, Microsoft's approach with SharePoint is to take that flat platform approach, give you a system with a lot of good core functionality, but with the real ability and intent to be able to build applications, business applications, and new functionality on top of that.
That's right. So you could go from manufacturing to hospitality to education, all just on top of SharePoint. So that's what a lot of Microsoft partners are not doing at this stage. They're always customizing from scratch, but if somebody would eventually start building a vertical apps on top of SharePoint core functions, that would be really amazing. Because all you need is SharePoint at the lower level, maybe throw in the workflows and BI and stuff like that, and eventually on top of that will be a complete solution, a vertical kind of application which manages anything from manufacturing to hospitality to universities and even to education ministries and stuff. Just yesterday, I was in one of the top business schools, the French business school called INSEAD, and they have an office here in Singapore. And did you know their entire MBA program at Intranet is running on SharePoint in 2003? It was really amazing. I didn't know that.
The community has really grown quite a bit, the SharePoint community, over the last couple of years. I know that, just last month or in June, that there was the – I think it's called the Community Kit for SharePoint. I know it's over on CodePlex, but it's a set of enhancements. There's new web parts and some new tools and different things that – developers in the community have just gotten together and let you use SharePoint to build a community website or a web application, if you will, so that you can have a web community built on top of that platform infrastructure.
That's right. Well, think of it as a community server that's available right now out there.
Sure.
You can run a community server to run your user group, or you can use it internally if you want to for collaboration. So this is something similar to that. Of course, there's also things like .NET Nuke has its own benefits and pros and cons.
Yeah, right. I was thinking about .NET Nuke and Intelligence Community Server and how they sort of fit into the equation here. Because, of course, they're very much outwardly facing products, where SharePoint seems to have just sort of gotten there after being an inwardly facing product.
I guess for every product that comes out like SharePoint, there will always be I wouldn't say open source, but it will always be a community project on the side where some very basic core functionalities will be made available that you can use when out of the box compared to getting the full-blown function of SharePoint 2007. So if you just wanted the ability to maybe do content management or maybe just the ability to work with blogs or collaborating between a whole bunch of people or content purely, and well, you don't have to have SharePoint. Right. But I'm kind of confused sometimes because if Microsoft allows that to happen, isn't that like direct competition to money that they earn, income that they get out of SharePoint?
Right.
Maybe I think this other product like Community Project or .NET Notebook is basically to give everybody a feel of what the power of ASP.NET is. And if you think that you want to go beyond that, well, there's always a server product available for you to use.
Well, I know that anybody who's interested in looking up that that community kit for SharePoint, it's at codeplex.com/CKS. You know, really I think it's all about enhancing SharePoint and making it so that it works better in an outward facing kind of way. There's some really interesting stuff there. So if you're really into SharePoint or if you're using it, it might be worth taking a look at.
All right, Sarbjit, I think we've run through our half hour already, and I almost feel like we've just finished the introduction to SharePoint.
Okay.
So I guess we're going to have you back on to drill farther into it. There's a bunch of other topics here, obviously, but SharePoint has become such a broad product.
It is. It's huge now. It's an entire platform of solutioning. Compared to just purely collaboration or a client server kind of minimalistic kind of application.
It's not just about
Office.
Before
we wrap this up, remember Microsoft has now Groove under its arm. So, which means Microsoft is pretty good at client server with SharePoint, and now they also have the client-to-client, peer-to-peer kind of collaboration as well.
Right, so, with Groove. Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see if they can bring those products together somehow.
So it's fantastic how you can collaborate with your colleagues while you're all traveling in the plane. Five of you could collaborate with Groove, and you come to the office, or you could all hook up to SharePoint server and push all these up to the intranet so everybody else in the company then gets it. So from peer-to-peer to client server and the collaboration market, I think Microsoft the leader.
It's an amazing combination of things. I think it's going to only get more amazing as they get a chance to pull these tools closer together. Sarbjit,
right.
Thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate your input in there and getting up so early with us this morning. And we'll get back into more SharePoint in future shows.
That'd be great. Thank you so much for the time.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.